Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 174. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. So, vSphere 7 Update 1. One of the biggest parts of that announcement was something they call vSphere with Tanzu. And a few weeks ago, John and I had a chance to catch up with some of the experts, Mr. Cormac Hogan and Mr. Miles Gray. And we had a great conversation that we want to share with you this week, so take a listen. All right, John, another great episode for VMworld 2020. We're going to talk some vSphere with Tanzu, and we've got some old friends that are going to be joining us, Mr. Miles Gray. Miles, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Pete.
And our good friend, Mr. Cormac Hogan. I blew your name already, Cormac Hogan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
So Hola. I got a question for you guys. It's Tanzu time, and we keep hearing about Tanzu, but what is Tanzu?
Cormac, you wrote the blog.
That's a good question. And I know it's been confusing a lot of, not even customers, but even internally, it's a bit difficult to get to grips on what Tanzu covers. But I suppose the easiest way is to say that Tanzu is like an umbrella for a whole bunch of cloud native, container, Kubernetes products that are coming out of the particular business unit inside of VMware. So I suppose for us, we're on today to talk more about the Kubernetes side of things. Now, when we launched vSphere 7.0, we launched a vSphere with Kubernetes product that was only available with VCF at the time. But what is interesting with the U1 release is that that has now grown, I guess, into two separate products. We still have the VCF with Tanzu, but what is generating a lot of excitement is the vSphere with Tanzu, which basically means that we can have the Kubernetes on vSphere experience without the requirement of having VCF and some of the other bits and pieces that go with VCF.
So is this going to support Brownfield for existing customers?
Yeah, so if, you know, like VCF, we all know, doesn't support Brownfield in certain situations, this is just a release of vSphere. So if you have vSphere 7.0 U1, you can use vSphere with Tanzu. So there's no prerequisite about it having to be a completely net new environment. You need two subnets, you install the HA proxy that's bundled with the solution, and away you go. So if you're, you know, you've got your legacy environment that you've taken from 6.7, 7.0, and you've upgraded to 7.0 U1, you can start from there. And yeah, you don't need to wipe fresh and reinstall.
So on the networking, you said two subnets, so just two VLANs. I don't need to have, I can use a VDS or can I use a standard switch, or is it just VDS?
No, so it's all actually VDS based. So the deployment comes in two flavors. So you can have two subnets or three subnets. I think in Cormac's lab, he used three different subnets. I used two subnets in mine, but either is supported, but it's all backed by a VDS. So obviously there's a certain licensing requirement for that, but yeah, it's all VDS backed, not VSS backed, simply from the point of view of it's a bad time to try and line up all your hosts with a VSS. It's you know, miserable to manage and operationalize.
Yeah, I always love you like capitalize one port group on one host and not another, then everything just blows up in your face. But
Linux,
yeah, I was also going to ask, so continuing the networking, you mentioned HA proxy. I assume that's for the load balancer. I assume though, what if I have an F5? What if I've got a Netscaler? You know, I've got some other load balancing thing.
Nothing there yet. So the reason we package HA proxy is we sort of got the message from customers whenever we released VCF with Tanzu that, you know, there's an awful lot of overhead in this to just get it up and running. What if I don't, I just want to try this out, right? Make it simple. Give me a POC environment. Give me something like that that's easy to set up. So we chose HA proxy because it's easy to package as an OVA, easy to deploy. So you roll out your HA proxy and away you go. Now, you asked about, you know, external load balancers. Nothing there yet, but we are working on other load balancing type solutions in the background for future releases at some point. But external load balancers aren't supported.
So just on that point, Miles, one of the things we had with the original vSphere with Kubernetes, now VCF with Tanzu, let's say, there was NSXT was available there, and that provided all the load balancer functionality. Now, as far as I'm aware, if you do have NSXT today, you can continue to use that, right? So you could deploy vSphere with Tanzu with NSXT, so you wouldn't actually have to use the HA proxy.
Correct. Yeah. So if you've got your vSphere environment there and you do have NSX, but it's not VCF, that's okay. You can still use that. So you don't have to use HA proxy. You can use HA proxy or NSX. Just usually most people that deploy NSX deploy it via VCF.
Yeah.
So that's why we usually refer to it under the VCF with Tanzu umbrella. But if you have NSX in it in a plain Jane vanilla vSphere environment, it'll work fine there too.
Fair enough.
So we talked about networking a bit here. What are the storage requirements?
Those are the same as before, John. So, the embedded CSI driver or the, let's say, the bespoke CSI driver that we have for vSphere with Kubernetes, that can consume any underlying vSphere storage. It's all policy driven again. So the idea is you would build your policy at the vSphere layer. Could be vSAN, could now be vVols as well, of course. You could also use tag-based policies to select a VMFS or an NFS data store. And then when you go to create your namespace, you would add your policies to your namespace. It's another vSphere with Tanzu construct, but let's not worry about that too much. And then when you go to create your persistent volumes in Kubernetes, they would just be landed or deployed upon the vSphere storage that you've put in your policy.
Besides deciding, I guess, which storage policies are available to a namespace, like what is my, are there any control points beyond that? Or is it whatever's backing that SPVM policy is how I do my quotaing or my throttling?
Yeah. No, it is more intelligent than that. It's not just, you give it a policy and you can do devs gone wild type thing. Every namespace has a quota of storage. So you can do like a global storage quota per namespace if you want, or you can go more than that. Say you've got gold, silver, bronze, you could allocate 50 of gold, 100 of silver, 200 of bronze. So, as well as having a global storage quota per namespace, you can have storage quotas per tier of storage as well, which is actually quite nice.
Probably want to mention a little bit more about namespaces as well, I guess, because it's probably a construct that's very new to a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. So,
when we're dealing with vSphere with Tanzu, the namespace construct is just basically a way of divvying up resources that you have available. So a namespace would, in a lot of ways, it's like a resource pool, I guess. So you would have your CPU limits, your memory limits. As Miles pointed out, you can have your storage limits as well. And the whole idea is that this would be a multi-tenancy type environment. So you would have a lot of devs, a lot of dev teams working on the same vSphere infrastructure. The namespace is a way of divvying up that set of resources so that the developers don't step on each other when it comes to, deploying out clusters and that kind of good stuff.
It does add some other nice little bits and pieces in there as well, which are like RBAC control per namespace. So you can have different teams access different namespaces, even though it's all the one management console, like they log into the same IP. When they log in with their, say, LDAP or whatever integrated username, they'll get back only the namespaces that they can access. So there's RBAC in there too, but it'll also do some really nice stuff. So for example, if you create a namespace with particular users assigned to it, it'll automatically give them access to that registry in Harbor. So you don't have to go and create, separate roles and map users to registries in one place and namespaces in another. It's all kind of like tied together the whole way through the stack. So you change it in one place and it changes it across multiple solutions.
Okay.
Well, this sounds really nice because previously if I was setting this up, I feel like I would have just given every team their own cluster, either at the hardware physical layer or maybe even like cluster of VMs. But this sounds like at scale, I would have ended up with a bazillion clusters and probably giving the wrong permissions. And so my dev contractor would have access to prod and my production staging team would have only had access to the backup environment for some reason. It sounds like this provides a much more sane centralized control.
So what about the Tanzu Kubernetes grid service? Where does that come in?
So TKGS is essentially the built-in version of TKG that comes with vSphere with Tanzu. And TKG is just the term that we use to describe Kubernetes. So if you want a Kubernetes cluster, you deploy a TKG cluster, a Tanzu Kubernetes grid cluster. And the TKG service is just something that lives on the supervisor cluster. So vSphere with Tanzu has two concepts. One is the supervisor cluster. The other is a guest cluster. Your workloads generally just run in the guest cluster. And the supervisor cluster, you can think of just like as a control plane. It accepts requests for some resources and it gives you back the resource. So for example, I'm a developer and I want a Kubernetes cluster. I send a request to the supervisor and say, hey, I'd like a Kubernetes cluster. I want it to have three workers and one control plane node. And away it goes. It deploys a TKG cluster via the TKG service for me and gives me back that Kubernetes cluster. So it's like you can think of it as kind of like a ticket desk or something like that, where basically a developer can just submit a request as code, critically, because that's how they like to do things with CI/CD. So you can submit a request as code, and then it gives you back your resource. So there's no intermediary, could you set up XYZ VM for me and then install packages and all that stuff.
And I think just to add to that, the really neat thing is that they can build as many guest Kubernetes clusters as they like, but they're limited to the amount of resources that you've allocated to the namespace. So they can't just, I should say, run wild. They are limited in what they can do through the namespace construct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so your namespace is actually a really nice way of grouping things on a team level, because you could say, you know, a particular team or a project, for example, you've got one project and you want to allocate those guys, 512 gigs of RAM, 100 vCPUs or something like that. And it's up to the developer from that point to use that sandbox, whatever way they want to use that sandbox. If they want to deploy volumes or VMs, they can do that. Or if they want to deploy TKG clusters or use native pods or vSphere pods, as we call them now, they can do that as well. So it's self-service after that point. So you just hand the developer a chunk of resource and you say, go do your thing, and they can use it whatever way they want to use it. So you're not in the way whenever they're trying to go and change things and move stuff around. They can do whatever they need to do, after they've got this pot of resource.
So there's definitely some form of governance, would you say, with
within vSphere with Tanzu, I would say. So vSphere with Tanzu largely in and of itself is a platform that allows the VI admin to maintain control over the environment while the developers get the self-service that they want. So the developers care about, deploying code and testing it and automating things critically. Anything that gets in the way of that is an inconvenience and they're going to try and work around. They're engineers at the end of the day. So you need to have some way to maintain control for the VI admin so all the resources just don't go disappear.
Right.
But the developer doesn't want someone in the middle saying, oh yeah, you can have this, you can have that, you can't have this, you can't have that. So upfront, as a VI admin, you say, okay, I'm going to give these people this much storage, this much compute, and they can do that with that what they will. So I guess, yeah, you could think of vSphere with Tanzu as a sort of administration and auditing system to make sure that everything that's being allocated by developers is under control and secure and, all the same defaults that you would expect from vSphere.
And that actually goes to the guest clusters as well, because those Tanzu Kubernetes Grid guest clusters, they're VMware engineered, so they're VMware supported. So there's a one-stop shop. You're not like searching GitHub for solutions to things. You actually go to our support organization if anything goes wrong in anywhere in that stack, and you get full support there. So I think that's critical as well.
Yeah, like Kubernetes has many places it can go wrong, as Cormac and I could attest to you. The amount of time that you spend on GitHub is unhealthy. So having one place where you go that's just, I've got a problem, can you fix it, please, is welcome.
Yeah. When you were talking about namespaces earlier, it reminded me of my previous storage days, where they would have, similar processes for storage to have like virtual, like multi-tenancy, if you will. So, it definitely reminded me of having...
You're going way back.
Yeah.
Wait, exactly. People trusted this man to manage a filer? This sounds like a terrible idea.
So would you say that namespaces and multi-tenancy, are there some differences in those two terms?
I think, at least from my perspective, it seems to be trying to pull it together. I guess it wouldn't be possibly fully multi-tenanted, particularly from a storage perspective, because I think you're still sharing the same underlying storage, although you can put limits on how much of the underlying storage you can consume. So I know some people might say, well, if you're sharing the underlying storage, well, that's not multi-tenanted then. But Yeah, and yeah, I would agree with that to some extent.
So I think namespace is just the viewpoint for each tenant coming in. Fundamentally, a namespace is just that unique access point within a multi-tenant system. Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, so in Kubernetes land, we actually borrow the namespace name from Kubernetes itself, because it's a good way of sort of referring to it. But in Kubernetes parlance, a namespace is just a bag of stuff that contains everything that your app needs to run. So it contains the containers. It contains the storage. It contains the load balancer, all that stuff. So everything that makes up the app lives inside a namespace, with some notable exceptions. But it's essentially just like a container that wraps everything together. And that's why we chose the same thing for vSphere, because at the end of the day, applications aren't just a Kubernetes cluster. You know, it would be naive to say your application is entirely contained within the Kubernetes cluster. It probably needs to call out to an LDAP service somewhere, an external database, whatever, right? So you group all of that stuff together in a namespace. So it's more like application-focused management rather than VM-focused management. So you can say, my CRM system is in the CRM namespace, and that contains the Kubernetes cluster. It contains the AD or whatever OAuth system that they're using that runs in a VM. It contains the databases. Maybe it uses traditional Microsoft SQL. That could be there inside the namespace as well. And the Kubernetes cluster, the pods inside that just talk to Microsoft SQL. So it's more of a way of managing an application as a group, similar to a VApp, I guess. You could say it's similar to a VApp, but more with better RBAC and, well, not better RBAC, it has RBAC, and, you know, resource quotas and that kind of thing. So it's kind of a hybrid between resource pools and a VApp, if you want to think about it that way.
That was the short answer, right?
That was the short answer, yeah. There was no TLDR. There it is at the end. It's just a VApp plus a resource pool equals a namespace.
I like the way you started too. It's just a big bag of tricks, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a big bag of stuff. That's it.
I guess before we leave it, we probably want to just highlight a few of the differences that we have in the 7.01 release if you go with the HA proxy approach. Mm-hmm. Now, we said that you could use HA proxy as a load balancer. You could also use NSXT as a load balancer if you had that. But if you go with the HA proxy approach, there's a few things that you don't get that you would have had previously, let's say with the VCF approach. The one thing is that if you want to use the pod VMs or native pod construct, you actually do require NSXT. If you go with the HA proxy approach, you don't get the native pods. They won't be available. What that also means is that the single click deployment of the Harbor image registry is no longer available either. So just a caveat, it's one of the limitations of going with the HA proxy approach over using NSXT. But just so people are aware of that.
Simply, I mean, there's the simple technical reason for that is the pod VMs rely on NSXT overlay networking. And if you don't have NSXT, then they can't spin up. So you don't get integrated Harbor. But if you want, you are still entitled to Harbor standalone, which you can install on a TKG guest cluster, and you will still get support for that. So there's just no native pod functionality built in. There are some other nice little bits and pieces that we added with CSI as well. Nothing massive, but we support offline volume resize now as well. Static volume provisioning for the supervisor cluster, so that you can do backup and restore of supervisor cluster apps. That is still in progress, but it's one of the things that sort of supports that effort. And
is that going to be tied to Valero or?
Yes, it is going to be tied into Valero. So if you have a look at the Valero upstream repository, they've got this sort of plugins concept now. And we've got the VADP plugin for Valero, which is just your standard VADP that you would run on VMDKs and lets you pull bits off disk and put them back. So that has been extended to support first-class disks, which Cormac has a blog on. So if you want to know more about FCDs, check out Cormac's article. But basically, it's just like there's a global catalog for all disks, and it's got a different metadata construct. So we implemented VADP for that. So it's going to allow in future, once ecosystem partners adopt it, you know, your Commvault, Veeams, what have you, the backup and restore of Kubernetes-based applications just through your standard backup infrastructure that you already have.
Nice. It's good to see that backups and data recovery, there is a future for that not becoming this being yet another silo. Like, I mean, there's enough people who have a point solution for that weird AIX server. They have a point solution for that weird Spark server. Like, we need containers to not just continue the sprawl of data protection solutions. So,
and they are a little bit more complex than VMs when it comes to backup and recovery, simply because the state that the application is in on the Kubernetes cluster at the point that it's backed up matters. So whenever you restore it, it needs to be restored in the same state. So you're not just backing up the bits on disk like we've always done with a VM, but you actually have to back up all the Kubernetes manifests as well. Because
this is like backing up vCloud Director, where you had to get all the metadata associated with the VM.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So if you think about it this way, if you've got a Cassandra instance and that's got three nodes in it at the point that you back it up, and if you restore it and there's only one and it's only got one, you know, shard copy of data restored to it, your data is gone. It's no good. So you need the backup and recovery application to know it needs to restore three instances of Cassandra and give each of them, you know, the copy of data that was backed up as well. So you've got this kind of two level thing where you care about the data that's on disk, but you care about the metadata that's on top of it as well. So that's what we're trying to tie third-party vendors into with Valero, so that they use Valero to pull the metadata off, but then they can use the standard VADP libraries to pull the bits off disk the way they always have.
Well, and that's cool, because if you do that right, before I would have thought you needed to stun, or traditionally on a distributed system, you would have needed to manage stunning all three copies or something, and then back them up all three at the same time, so triple the overhead. Triple the throughput requirements, and then restore all three at the same time. Like, that's what we would have done. We would have issued a freeze, crashed everyone's access to the application, so let's only do this at 1 a.m. or something, versus, okay, we know this is just one of three copies of the same stupid thing, and then get that metadata and then be able to rehydrate that intelligently. That's not just managing state and actually, you know, handling that, but that's also just being smarter with the IO path of how much data you move.
There's actually a working group in Kubernetes upstream at the minute that purely focuses on data protection of distributed systems. Because like you said, distributed locking and distributed atomic snapshotting is a really hard problem. So that is
regular snapshotting and quiescing is a hard problem.
Hard, right. Yeah. So whenever you make it a distributed application, it gets even more fun.
Right.
So, they have an upstream committee that's looking at how they're going to do, distributed snapshotting, pulling bits off disk, quiescing stuff in a consistent manner across a large distributed application. So that's still underway. A lot of that work is still formative, but they're basically trying to come up with a specification, because that's how Kubernetes runs things. They think about all of the ways that something could work. They come up with a spec, and then they say, okay, implement your application to this specification, and, you know, we'll go from there. So that's still something that's sort of in the works. But yeah, this is kind of a first step. It gives us atomic backups, which is always a good thing, because non-atomic backups are not really backups.
There you go. Yeah. I also saw that there's support for lifecycle management using VLCM now with Tanzu. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just because we took NSX out of it. NSX is supported in the new version of VLCM as well. Isn't that right, Pete?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so there was some work that we needed to do around the supervisor cluster that we mentioned earlier. Its VMs didn't like VLCM in the initial release. So we've extended VLCM to support the supervisor cluster, the lifecycle that goes with that. So it knows how to handle those whenever it comes to upgrades.
Well, and I love this fact that VLCM, it's this amazing tool. And partly because I guess it's declarative, it can expand its scope more rapidly across multiple areas of the stack. Versus VMware Update Manager, that I'm pretty sure is actually shrunk from its original mandate, because it used to actually like patch OS things at one point. And so, you know, anytime you have an imperative-based patching tool and then you see something else you want to patch, that something else will say, screw it, I'm just going to go build my own patching tool. And you end up with 20 lifecycle tools. This looks like a healthy, you know, it's still early here with VLCM. We're still in the early innings, but it looks like it's definitely heading in the right direction towards helping become, you know, that central inflection point for the lower levels of the SDDC.
I think what we're really realizing as infra admins and, you know, just in the ops sector, is that the declarative management paradigm is a better way of doing things. The fact that you just state, I would like this to be like this when it's done,
yeah,
and you don't care about how it achieves that, That is a much better way of managing systems. So that's what Kubernetes does. That's why there's a big drive towards containers and Kubernetes, because you say, I would like my app to look like this, make it look like that. I don't care how you do it, just do it. And you walk away, you let the system figure it out. And if it can't, then it will error out and you can deal with it at that point, but it will continually try. And that's, you know, sort of the same as VLCM. VLCM is a declarative framework as well. You say, I want my cluster to look like this, make it so. Don't care how you do it, just make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like that we're layering on UIs and things to this, because originally the discussion on declarative was like, oh, it's all infrastructure as code. Here's my 200 lines of, you know, desired state config, PowerShell. And yeah, this is how you're going to manage your data center. And your typical Windows admin would look at that, who hadn't spent a whole lot of time in a CLI, and be like, this is the future. I need to, you know, can I become a plumber? But I think VLCM and some of these Kubernetes tooling are showing a path towards like, look, you do not have to, not every bit of infrastructure is going to have to be 400 lines of YAML. There's definitely ways to have nice interfaces and pleasurable ways to work with some of this infrastructure as code constructs.
It just looks like people have rediscovered what control loops and finite state machines are. Like that's really what it feels like. These things have been concepts for, you know, 30, 40 years, whereas now they're like, oh, we could use this to manage the infra as well, not just the application. So we're just taking those things that have existed in software forever and applying them to the operational viewpoint on things. So the infrastructure, you know, the application deployment itself.
Good point.
But you do bring up a good point. Just, you know, giving visibility into, you know, what's actually happening under the covers. So we've spent a lot of time in the vSphere client actually just showing things like how is the vSphere storage being consumed. So we have the whole CNS part, we have the UI component of that showing all the different Kubernetes clusters and the different persistent volumes that are sitting on top of the vSphere storage. And the same applies with vSphere with Tanzu, is that when your developer in a namespace creates their own guest clusters, we actually build guest cluster objects under the covers. So you can actually see that as a VI admin as well. Just drill down into your inventory, open up that particular namespace, and you can see the guest clusters represented in there. So yeah, I think that's very important to visualize some of this stuff, because not everybody wants to be creating YAML scripts and all the rest of it.
Well, and I like that it's, yeah, from the UI, it's making the stuff a first-class citizen. It looks just like a virtual machine.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's been a lot of evolution when Kubernetes first started becoming a thing with VMware. And you guys, Miles and Cormac, you both have been working pretty extensively in the Kubernetes space. What are your opinions as we close about the direction VMware is going with this new vSphere with Tanzu?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, I went to DockerCon back in 2017. So that was kind of my first exposure to that. So the last 3 years, I've been doing an awful lot of work around containers, around Docker, around Kubernetes. I like what we're doing. I like the ease of which we're allowing things to occur within vSphere. I think, as Miles said earlier, you know, the deployment of a guest cluster is simply like deploying any other manifest file. It's just a simple YAML file. You put in how many control plane nodes, how many worker nodes, what image do I want on those nodes, and you know, how big is the VM that I'm going to run? You know, is it small, medium, large, whatever? You just apply that to the API server, and lo and behold, you have another Kubernetes cluster deployed on vSphere infrastructure. So that is, I think it's really cool. I really like what we're doing, and I'm seeing some of the things probably we can't talk about just yet, but I think, we're really getting to the point where it doesn't matter whether it's a virtual machine or whether it's a container, vSphere is the best place to run that.
I think similar to Cormac, like I've been messing with this stuff for 2.5, 3-ish years now. And largely over the last 2.5 years, I've been doing the containers and Kubernetes stuff manually just with vanilla Kubernetes. And it's just a pain in the ass. It's really, really hard to do. There's such a steep learning curve to this stuff. If you're going in fresh, like as a VI admin, as I was when I started, you're talking a good year really before you understand how all that stuff works under the covers. And the fact that we're just making this something that you click a couple of buttons, you give it some subnets and it deploys for you, and you don't need to understand the underlying complexity. That is the missing piece to me, is just something that manages the setup, something that manages the life cycle. So you don't need to know about, oh, well, I'm going to go kubectl, describe this particular pod and this container within the pod. Oh, wait, no, there's three instances of that. So I'm going to go check each one of those in the daemon set to make sure, you know, figure out where it's gone wrong. You don't need to care about any of that stuff. It just comes up. It just works. And if it doesn't work, you call GSS and you make it their problem instead. And that's a much better place to be to me than, you know, the manual doing everything upstream, doing it completely vanilla. You would need full-time engineers realistically if you wanted to go that route in your business, and it's just not practical. And like Cormac said, the fact that we've got this foundation now, the fact that we've got this platform, there's some very, very exciting stuff coming up in the future here that we just wouldn't have been able to build otherwise reliably as well, because we use Kubernetes as that infrastructure layer underneath for the platform. It just makes everything that runs on top of it so much easier to manage, lifecycle manage, to diagnose, all that kind of stuff. So the potential for us building stuff on top of this platform is even greater at this point as well. So I'm really quite hopeful for what we've got coming to this in the future.
That's powerful. I like it. All right, gentlemen. Well, I appreciate the update on Tanzu. And yeah, thanks for coming on, man. We'll see you around.
Catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Cormac and Miles for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.